WMFO, Medford. Like milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books. There's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 13th of November, 2023. Nothing really exciting to share this morning, except we're going to go back to Dodge City. It's been a while. I heard an Alvin and the Chipmunks song referencing Marshall Dillon. This one, this Gunsmoke is titled The Photographer. It had an original air date of the 6th of May, 1956. Thanks.
Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Walk is just what I needed, Mr. Dillon. I sure been sleepy today.
You got spring fever, Chester.
I guess so. It is nice weather, ain't it? Won't be long now, the cattle drives will be starting.
Yeah, and the streets will be full of Texas cowhands looking for trouble.
Yes, sir. But you know, I'm almost looking forward to them this year.
And now come July, you'll be pining for this peace and quiet.
Maybe, but not right now. Maybe I'll just stop by the tonsorial, Mr. Dillon, if it's all right with you.
Sure. Well, what for?
Well, like you said, it's spring. They got a bath there. Besides, it's time to get unsewed.
You better leave them on. We might have a late frost.
I don't know. I'm beginning to itch some. Hey, what's that crowd in front of the Long Branch?
I don't know.
What do you suppose it is, Mr. Dillon? Hey, maybe it's a medicine show.
Well, let's go take a look, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever it is, that fellow sure has drew a crowd, and that's a fact.
Uh-huh.
There he is. Miss Kenny's talking to him.
Yeah.
Well, guess there can't be no trouble, then.
Oh, hello, Matt.
Oh, Kitty.
Hey, Marshal, you come to have your picture took, too?
Yeah. The Marshal looked real smart in a tintype, huh?
You tell him to.
So that's it. You're taking pictures, huh?
That's right, Matt. This is Professor Jacoby. He calls himself
An artist of the camera.
Well, forevermore. So this is one of them things I've been hearing about.
That's right. Oh, well, keep your hands. What? Keep your hands off it, my good man. It's a very sensitive instrument.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, you're Marshal Dillon, I take it, sir.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad to meet you, Marshal. I was coming to look you up directly. Quite naturally, you're one of the subjects I most wish to immortalize with the camera.
Oh, is that so?
Certainly, certainly. Western Marshall is one of our great heroes back east.
They are? You don't say.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, Professor, what's that little tent for?
Oh, that's where I do my developing, sir.
Oh, developing?
Why, of course. Pyro and soda, you understand.
Well...
And the plate must be developed immediately before it dries.
Oh, naturally.
Now, miss...
Well... I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
You stand aside. If you'll just relax, miss.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to shoot you, you know.
Okay.
Let me see. Now, that's not precisely what I'm after.
Hmm?
What we need is another subject.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, another person. You, sir, would you step up, please? Yes, you,
me,
you.
Me?
That's right.
How do you like that? He's going to immortalize old Toad.
Just come right over here, sir. That's it, that's it. Now, miss, if you'll just stand beside him.
Him?
Well, anything for art's sake, you know? We want this to look absolutely authentic.
I think I'm going to like this, Miss Kitty.
Now, don't go getting any ideas, Toad.
Ah, that's fine, that's fine. Now, miss, if you'll just look up at him with that... well, you know what I mean.
No, I don't know.
Professor, why don't you just take your pictures of people the way you find them? They'll be authentic enough.
No, of course, Marshal. I meant no offense.
That's all right, Matt. Go ahead, Professor.
Yes, of course. That's it.
Hey, where's he going?
Well, ducking under that black cloth there.
Hey, you're going to have a hard time crawling into that little box.
That's good now. Don't take your eyes off the camera and don't move a muscle while I'm counting. You understand?
Uh-huh.
All right, take a big breath. Hold it. One Missouri, two Missouri, three Missouri, four Missouri, five Missouri, Missouri, seven Missouri, eight Missouri, nine Missouri, 10 Missouri, 11. Good, good.
Well, ain't that something, Mr. Dillon?
You know, I want to see that picture, Kitty. You look like the camera was a rattlesnake.
Well, it might as well have been. I'm glad it's over.
And now, Marshal. Marshal, maybe you will oblige.
Well, no, thank you, Professor. Maybe later, huh?
And perhaps I'll take one of these gentlemen here. You, sir. You look like a gunfighter.
No? Grubbs may try to look and act like a gunman, Professor, but he's not very desperate.
Oh, I see. Perhaps you have someone in your jail, Marshal.
No, not at the moment.
I know what the Eastern public wants, sir, what it wants to see. Dance hall girls and desperados, gunfighters, savage Indians, the violence of the West. And it's the violence I'm after, most of all. That's what will sell my photographs.
Professor, then all you have to do is wait.
Wait for how long?
Oh, maybe a few weeks when the trail herds start coming.
Well, I haven't got a few weeks, Marshal.
Well, then I guess we can't help you.
Well, don't worry, Marshal. I'll manage.
No? How?
You'll see. I'm a man of ideas, Marshal.
That whistling man, Bobby Haggard, really started something. Tonight, we'd like to introduce a player piano that could have come right out of the Long Branch in Dodge City.
Packs more pleasure, packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Why Chesterfield? Mild. Yet they satisfy the most.
Sam.
Howdy, Marshal.
Morning, Matt.
Oh, hello, Kitty. Oh, if you mind if I sit down.
Well, I haven't yet, have I?
Well, what are you grinning about?
I saw your picture. What was that you said to me about rattlesnakes?
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad, wasn't it? Well, maybe if you didn't have to hold still for so long.
Sure. Anyway, you're immortalized now. The professor will have your face all over the papers back east.
If they'll print it.
Matt, seriously.
Hmm?
I don't like that man.
Oh?
There's something about him. I don't know what it is.
Well, he seems all right, Kitty. Maybe you're just not used to photographers.
Well, neither are you.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester.
Mr. Dillon, you better come.
Now, what's the matter?
Out at the end of Bridge Street, they just found Old Toad. He's dead.
Dead?
But that ain't all. He's been scalped.
What do you make of it, Matt?
I don't know, Doc.
Neither do I. There hasn't been any Indian trouble lately. Surely no Indian come this close to town.
Doc, it wasn't an Indian. That's not the way they use a knife.
Well, then, who did do it, Mr. Dillon? Old Toad wasn't much good, but he never hurt nobody.
There's another funny thing, Matt. Doesn't look like it was done right here, but like it was done over there by that building. And then he was dragged out here into the open.
Yeah, out in the open. Into the sunlight. Now, wait a minute.
What are you looking for, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, this, right here, Chester.
Well, I don't see nothing.
Those three little marks on the ground there. You know what makes marks like that?
No, what?
The three-legged stand they use for a surveyor's instrument. Or a camera.
Camera? Matt, no man would do that just for a picture.
Well, there's one way to find out.
Come in, come in.
Ah, Marshal.
Ah, Professor. Looks like you're packing. You going someplace?
Yes, Marshal. I've covered Dodge pretty thoroughly. Now I want to go out onto the plains and get some pictures. You know, buffalo hunters, Indians.
Aren't you leaving kind of sudden?
Well, what do you mean? I've been planning to go down into the Indian territory.
Well, they might be pretty dangerous right now, Professor.
Oh, I'm not timid, Marshal.
Oh, I know that. But did you hear there's Indian trouble starting? A man was scalped this morning right here in Dodge.
Yes, I heard something of it. But I'm not frightened.
Why not, Professor? Because you know it wasn't an Indian that did it?
Just what do you mean, Marshal?
I'd just like to know how you were able to get there and take a picture of Toad before anybody else knew anything about it.
Perhaps I was just lucky, Marshal? I met the man who found him.
I think it was more than luck.
Are you accusing me of killing that man?
Maybe you didn't do it yourself. But I think you hired it, Don.
Can you prove that?
I can when I find the man you hired.
The whole thing is ridiculous, Marshal. Besides, he was nothing but a scavenger, a derelict.
He was a man, and it was murder. Whoever did it will hang for it.
Well, it's no concern of mine. Unless, of course, I can take a photograph of the hanging.
You'll do anything for a picture, won't you?
Well, almost anything, Marshal. Like I told that girl, anything for art's sake. And that was a good picture I got of Toad, Marshal. Perhaps you'd like to see it.
No, thanks.
Well, it's going to be quite a feather in my cap when I take it back east to Harper's.
Maybe you won't take it back east, Jacoby. This might be one picture you paid too high a price for.
Matt, why didn't you lock him up?
I got no proof against him, Doc, unless I can find the man who actually did it. And I got no idea who that is. Jacoby's been seen around town with a lot of men, but nobody special.
He's liable to skip town on you.
Well, I hope so.
What's that?
Well, I figure he's going down into Indian territory. He won't go alone. Even he's not that foolish. And a logical one to go along with him is a man he'd already hired to do a job for him.
Yeah, that's so.
Anyway, it's the last chance I got.
The town sure stirred up about it. You'd never have thought old Toad had a single friend.
Sure, they're upset. They think it was Indians.
And the professor put the picture on display in the window of the Dodge House. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard.
And maybe it was him started the talk about calling the cavalry out against the Indians.
Well, he'd like nothing better than an Indian war to photograph.
What kind of a man is that?
I don't know, Doug.
Mr. Dillon, Moss Grimmick says the professor left town just before dawn this morning.
Alone?
Nope. Tom Grubbs was with him.
Tom Grubbs. Sure. A two-bit would-be gunman. All right. Now all we gotta do is catch up with him.
Where are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your favorite easy chair? Or out driving? Oh, there you are. In the kitchen. Say, you want to make whatever you're doing more enjoyable? Have a Chesterfield. Enjoy Chesterfield's better taste and mildness. It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Why Chesterfield? Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
I don't like it, Mr. Dillon. I don't like it a little bit.
What, Chester?
All this Indian sign.
You just keep your eyes open. We'll manage. I guess Jacoby will be happy. He should be getting all the pictures he can use. I notice he's stopped several times.
Pictures? I hope I never meet another photographer.
Well, maybe they aren't all like him, Chester.
Well, I hope not.
Hold up, Chester.
Hmm? What, Mr. Dillon?
Something over in that clump of weeds there.
Marshal.
What, man? A white man? Mr. Dillon, it's Grubb.
Yeah, come on.
Oh. Marshal.
Mr. Dillon, he's been hurt bad. He's bleeding.
Yeah, he's been knifed.
Help me, Marshal.
Where's Jacoby?
Over there. Somewhere, I don't know, I ran and hit.
What happened?
Indian. Cheyenne. I told you, Colby, but he wouldn't listen. I tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen.
Told him what?
About the burial ground. Bad enough just being here. And then him trying to take pictures of Cheyenne. There was only three of them. But when he saw him taking a picture of the burial ground,
my goodness, that's bad, Mr. Dillon. Uh-huh. They get awful mad when somebody fools around the burying place.
What did they do, Grubbs?
He attacked us. Fought one of them off, and I ran and hid. I guess they couldn't find me.
Grubbs, why don't you tell me about it?
About what?
About Toad.
All right, I'll tell you. Professor gave me a lot of money. I guess I shouldn't have done it. If Marshall?
Yeah.
I didn't even get my picture took. Ain't that...
He sure was some gunman. Killing a helpless little old man for money.
Yeah. Now let's see about Jacoby now.
Hey, Mr. Dillon. You think them Cheyenne might still be around?
No, they just showed up by now, Chester.
There's the burial ground. Hey, look. There's his camera.
Yeah. All smashed.
And his pictures? All scattered around, or is it... My gracious.
Chester, huh? Over here.
That ain't a nice sight, is it, Mr. Dillon?
No. There's a kind of justice in it, Chester.
Yeah. They did to him just what he had Grubbs do to old Toad.
Well, we better bury him. Then maybe we better gather up those pictures.
What for?
We'll send them back east for him. Maybe they'll be immortal like he hoped. Who knows? He might turn out to be a big hero.
And wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. Doubt there have been heroes like that before. All right, come on.
In a moment, our star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
You know, at best it was hard to scratch out a living on the high plains. But next week, hunger, disease, and a baby combined to defeat a man. And that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The special music for Gunsmoke was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Harry Bartell, and James Nusser. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Live modern. Smoke L&M. Only with L&M can you enjoy the full, exciting flavor of today's finest tobaccos. No other cigarette, plain or filter, gives you the full, exciting flavor you get through the pure white Miracle Tip. So light up, free up, let your taste...
Yeah, I've had about enough of those cigarette commercials. It's kind of ironic that AccuWhatever for Chesterfields removes human error in cigarette manufacture. And the whole idea that human error, the whole manufacturing. My name is Arthur. And you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. We heard The Photographer, this episode of Gunsmoke, with an original air date of the 6th of May, 1956. I'm going to say Norman McDonald produced that. I didn't realize previously on the last two shows I've played Have Gun Will Travel, I didn't realize he was involved in that until I played him the past couple of weeks. Learned something new every day here at the old radio. I can't even finish that. The old radio. Alright, stay tuned. We'll have a FCC obligation before we return to the second half of the program.
If you want to stay alive this holiday season, when you drink, plan not to drive. We'll tell you the reason. You could lose your license and end up doing time. Pay thousands of dollars too in lawyers' fees and fines.
This holiday season, if you plan to drink, plan how to get home safely. Designate a driver or call a cab.
Make a plan before you go, when your head is clear. Don't wait till you've had eggnog, hot wassail, or beer.
Brought to you by the Texas Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Texas Department of Transportation. So we went from Kansas in the first half of the show to Texas for a public service announcement. Below me, Pete Regolo and the Richard Diamond, music from the Richard Diamond soundtrack. So that means Richard Diamond coming up. I forget exactly why I chose this episode. This episode's titled Barton Case, the original air date of the 1st of May, 1949. Or maybe, I forget because I prepped this show late last week. It might be one of the earlier ones. Still kind of intrigued that Blake Edwards wrote so much in radio before going on to film. But there's always one thing in common with me, like this jazz. Thanks for listening.
Here's Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Afternoon, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, afternoon, Ed.
Have a good lunch, Mr. Diamond?
Too early to tell.
Hey, you must shave with a dull razor. You got a scratch on your face.
I use a rake.
Here's your floor, Mr. Diamond.
Thanks, Ed. Well,
Good afternoon, gentlemen. What can I do for...
Oh, that was nifty, Ziggy. Is that Diamond?
Yeah, Chino. That's him.
Pick him up and drag him over to the chair, Ziggy.
Sure thing, Chino. He's really out.
Yeah. See if you can bring him around. Be a shame if he missed anything.
Chino, would you mind holding my ash can handle? It might break his jaw.
A pleasure, Ziggy.
Diamond. Diamond. He looks like he ain't gonna make it. Maybe you slapped him too hard.
You hurt me, Ziggy. You know how careful I am. Here, try this pitcher of water.
I felt like I was lying in the middle of a crowded sink and someone had piled all the dishes on my head. They turned on the faucet and I floated up with a dirty coffee cup and took a look around. I treaded water and squinted through my dewy eyelids at two of the ugliest dishwashers I'd ever seen.
He's twitching.
Oh.
See, Ziggy, he's just lazy.
Diamond, let us know when things start making sense.
Oh, that's a dirty trick.
Well, he's talking screwy.
What's a dirty trick, Diamond?
I'm stuck in the drain.
I think you hit him too hard. He's liable to be talking like that from now on.
Give it time. Diamond, you'll pull yourself out.
Yeah. How did your monkeys get in here anyway?
He's back. Now go to work, Ziggy, but keep him with us.
Hey, wait a minute.
It's enough, Ziggy. Can you hear me, Diamond?
He don't like it. He's going to be hard to get along with.
Belt him across the ears. He'll listen. Hear me now?
He's nodding his head. I guess he wants to keep his mouth shut so the teeth don't fall out.
Fine. Now listen, Diamond. When you get a call from a Mr. Barton, turn down the job. Understand? Ziggy, see if he's tuned in.
Oh. Yeah, Chino. He says now he's got his sore arm.
Remember, Mr. Barton, you don't want to work for him. Think he gets it?
Sure, Chino, but he looks tired from the strain.
Oh. Then put him to sleep, Ziggy.
99 time.
He didn't have to say 99. It was only 2:00 in the afternoon. He tapped me once more with a galvanized sleeping pill and tucked me away for a rest. The next thing I knew, a pair of gray suede gloves were patting my sore face. Maybe he didn't want to leave any fingerprints on my bruises.
Mr. Diamond, can you hear me?
Oh, you know, this can get monotonous. Go away.
Should I call the police, Mr. Diamond?
What? Oh. Oh, I was expecting uglier company.
Could you sit up? I'm getting some of your blood on my shoes.
That's tough. I'll turn it off. I'll bet your name's Barton.
Why, that's right. How did you know?
I'm lucky. Now get out of here.
But I want to talk to you.
I just had one long conversation, but it was too one-sided. Go on. My health is doubtful, but it's fun to have it around for company.
Maybe $500 would pick you up?
Yeah, it might, for a while. But I don't like to waste that kind of money on funerals.
$750?
So they line the coffin with velvet.
$1,000.
You're begging to make a short life sound practical.
If you do the job successfully, there'll be another $1,000.
You just bought yourself a corpse. Let me wash up. Talk some more. I can hear you.
It's my son, Roger. He thinks he killed a man.
He thinks? What do you want me to do? Find out for sure so I can brag about it?
Ever heard of a John Alter?
Sure. Walt Levinson sent him up 5 years ago on a manslaughter rap.
Well, he doesn't like it up there and he'd like to get out.
I don't blame him. What's this got to do with your son?
I'm chairman of the parole board. Oh, you look much better now, Mr. Diamond. I can't stand the sight of blood.
It doesn't bother me. It happens every week. So, you're the chairman of the parole board.
Yes, some of Alter's friends promised to keep quiet about my son if I let Alter go free when he comes up before the board next week.
Mm-hmm. And you think maybe your son was framed?
Yes, about a month ago, he met a girl in Florida. Her name is Lenore Brown, and she's a friend of Alter's.
How did they spring the frame?
I beg your pardon?
You must associate with a higher type thug. Spring the frame. Made it look like your son killed somebody.
Oh. Well, when Roger, that's my son, went to pick up the Lenore girl at her apartment, he found her struggling with some man.
That happens.
It looked like he was trying to kill her. There was a gun on the floor, and she called to Roger for help. He picked up the gun and shot the man. She told Roger he had killed him and that he must get out. When we went back, they were both gone. About a month later, some of Alter's friends got in touch with me.
Oh, and they forget about the killing if you let Alter out of Sing Sing.
That's right.
I don't remember reading anything about it in the papers.
Well, you're the first one outside of Alter and his friend who know anything about it. You see, they say they're hiding the corpus delicti, so there was no report of the murder.
Keeping a sieve handy isn't that easy. Why didn't you call the law?
If my son did kill this man, that's the first thing I intend doing. But I have a feeling this man is not dead.
Oh, you think maybe they staged the killing, put blanks in the gun, and after your son beat it, the stiff walked out under his own steam?
That's what I want you to find out. If my son is innocent, I want you to bring the parties responsible to justice.
Amen.
Here's a check for $1,000. If you find the girl and prove my son innocent, there'll be another $1,000 in your pocket.
I'll sew up the holes. Well, thanks, Mr. Barton. I'll start right away.
Goodbye, Mr. Diamond. You can reach me at the Wentworth Hotel. I'm staying there until this matter gets cleared up.
I won't get in touch with you unless I find something. The guys who worked me over are pretty set in their ways, and there's no sense in you tripping over a lot of dead bodies. I looked at the $1,000 check and thought about the beating the two polite gunsels had given me. It was a toss-up. If I'd spent $1,000 like I knew I would, I'd be dead anyway. The two goons were probably still hanging around my building, and if they spotted me, they'd guess I'd taken the job. When I get more than $10 in my pocket, I smile all over. I went out the back way and through the alley. Had to start somewhere, so I headed for the 5th Precinct Police Station. When you're looking for a killer, homicide's got all the roadmaps on murder. An old friend and ex-partner was in charge. The men who worked the detail called him Lieutenant Levinson, but he had a couple of friends who still called him Walt. I was one of them. You earn that right when you work for a guy for 6 years. After I left the force, Walt started doing a solo, but he now had a sergeant who stumbled around after him. His name was Otis, and he had the biggest feet in the state of New York. Every time he took off his shoes, I wanted to grab a champagne bottle and launch them. I don't think he liked me. When I walked in, his face always looked like an advertisement for a sour stomach.
Well, Richard Diamond, private detective.
Well, Sergeant Otis, homicide's answer to the missing link.
What was that last word?
Well, you're half safe, I said link. Walt in?
Yeah. You turn the knob and you push.
Why don't you get that uniform cleaned? Some dad's going to get up and walk to the station without you.
Well, hello, Rick. If you've got... You must get tired changing your face every day. Somebody shove you around again?
Been catching up on my patty cake, Walt. Tell me, did you ever know a bit of fluff named Lenore Brown?
Sure, John Alder's expense account. Used to hold hands before I sent him up.
Know where I can find it?
Alder's still got her staked out. When he leaves stir, he's going to come back and dig up the claim. You better forget about it. She's got the antidote for lonely nights, but some of Alder's boys are protecting her.
I know, yeah. They gave me a pep talk this afternoon.
And then listen to him. Better watching the game from the bench.
You never can tell. I might make a score.
Well, you're outweighed, outclassed, and liable to be outlived. She used to work at the Black Swan in Florida. Her daughter was trying to get a parole, and she came to New York to be close to him.
Any lying on her here in town?
No, but if she's seeing Alder, you might spot her on a visitor's day. Now, look, Rick, why don't you stop chasing two-bit thugs and come back on the force? I never had ulcers when we were working together.
You know how I feel about that, Walt. I'm a restless guy. Sometimes I like to sleep late in the morning.
Okay, Rick. Want me to call the warden and tell him you're coming?
Yeah, thanks, Walt. Take it easy.
Bye, Rick. Be a good boy.
Yes, Paul?
Mr. Richard Diamond to see you, warden.
Oh, send him in.
You can go on in, Mr. Diamond.
Thanks, Paul. Well, Rick, how are you? It's been a long time.
I know a lot of guys who wouldn't like to hear that, Warden. How are you, Jim?
Just great. What's on your mind?
I hear Johnny Alter's been having company. I'd like to take a look at her.
Oh, Miss Brown. Well, I can't blame you.
I just want to spot her and see where she goes.
You can't miss. If she walked through the yard, there'd be a jailbreak tomorrow.
What time are visiting hours?
Well, if she's seeing Alter today, she should be downstairs right now. Pardon me a second.
Yes, Warden.
Paul, has Lenore Brown come in today?
Yes, she has, Warden. She's in seeing Alter right now.
Thanks, Paul. She's downstairs, Rick. Like to take a look?
Yeah.
I'll have Paul take you down. On second thought, I'll go myself.
Well,
there she is. Sitting at the end table talking to Alter.
Oh. Now I know why Alter needs a lot of money. She's wearing enough mink to carpet Radio City.
You should get a load of her on a warm day.
Coat doesn't stop me. She'd show up, even if she's wearing a tent. How long has she got with Alter?
About another 5 minutes.
Warden, maybe I'll let you put me away for a couple of years. With something like that to look forward to on Visitor's Day, I might go for the change.
Well, you'd get tired of just talking. Think what you could do on the outside.
Yeah, I am, but it would probably send me right back up here.
You want to stick around till she's through talking?
Thanks, Jim. I'll wait in front till she comes out. I hung her on by the big gray buildings until she came out. She walked over to a long white convertible and got in. Now I know what the guy meant when he wrote, "Ask the man who owns one." I decided to let her buy me a new fuse, and I walked over to the car. Going to town?
Oh? Back up 3 feet, and I'll let you know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Your tailor couldn't do all of that.
Thanks.
Get in. Visiting?
Yeah, the warden's an old friend.
How many years did you know him?
Baby. I've been going home every night all my life.
Every night?
Well, almost.
What do you do with the almost?
Depends. Everybody likes something different.
You must get tired thinking up new ideas.
Oh, I don't think much. It's more fun being surprised. Hey, what are you stopping for? We just got started.
Surprise?
Oh, yeah. And the nickel-plated one. Look, baby, you don't have to pull a gun. If I'm getting fresh, I'll get out and walk.
You'll sit right there, Diamond.
Oh, name dropper.
Mm-hmm.
Expecting company?
Mm-hmm, and you've met them before, honey.
That's nice. I wouldn't want you to get stuck with the introductions. That's your friends coming along in that car?
It should be. Now hold real still. They'll only shoot you this time.
Sometimes you're lucky. When a dame's got a gun on you, you don't stand much of a chance unless she's got her mind on something else. This one did. And when she looked up in the rearview mirror to make sure it was her boys, I tagged her. My two playmates were just pulling up in the green sedan when I went out of the car like a dry transmission.
There he is! He's slugging him up!
Nail him!
He let go just as I dived off the side of the road and hit the center embankment. I rolled to the bottom and came up looking like an exhibit for smallpox.
He's down the hill. Go get him, Ziggy!
There was a line of trees just off to the right, and I got to them just as Ziggy tried again. He needed a rifle. I was running through the trees then, and I could hear Ziggy somewhere behind me falling all over himself. I pulled my gun and thought about waiting for him. I could give him so many holes he'd whistle in a high wind, but I had another idea. I stopped and listened.
He's around here somewhere.
Well, come on, we'll spread out.
That tore it right down the middle. They were somewhere behind me, and both of them were looking.
Get off of me, you villain! Get off! I got on a new suit.
Oh, my deepest apologies, Gino. I thought you was Diamond.
Can't you tell a difference, Ziggy? He's got on a blue suit.
Oh, I'm a little colorblind.
Now let's find Diamond.
They started hunting again, and I cut off to my left and headed back to the highway. I reached the hill that sloped down from the highway, and I went up fast. The cars were about 100 yards down the road, and I used my last lung getting there. Lenore was still out, just like I'd left her when I put her to sleep. I went over to the Gunsel's car and lifted the hood. Chino and Ziggy could apologize all night while they looked for a new distributor. I went back to the white convertible with the unconscious nylons and got in. I noticed something lying on the seat. It was her purse, and she didn't wake up when I grabbed it. Doing a rummage job at 80 miles an hour isn't easy. But there wasn't much of interest anyway, just a little black book. I needed a gimmick, so I stuck it in my pocket. I put the purse back on the seat just as she started coming around.
Oh.
Well, now that's it, baby. Sit up and look at the pretty scenery.
How did you get here? Where's Ziggy and Chino?
Playing Peter Pan. Jaw hurt?
Yes, your heel.
Play rough and you get hurt. Where do I take you?
My apartment, I guess. You're going to ask a lot of questions, and I don't talk much. We might as well figure out something to fill in the lull.
I drove to her place on East 51st and walked her to the door. She looked at me like a fat woman eyeing a French pastry, and her mouth slipped down to her shoelaces when I gave her a peck on the cheek and left her standing with an old front doorknob in her hand. I knew she wasn't going to spill anything, even if I got her drunk. Besides, she could probably drink Tony Galindo under the table and still be sober enough to play hopscotch. I went back to the office and took out her little black book. There were a lot of names, and some of them I knew. Chino. And after it, likes his work. And Ziggy. And after his name, has own gun. Yeah. Richard Diamond, too. I never did figure out what the three stars were for. I forgot all about my date with Helen when the phone rang. Yeah?
Hello, Rick.
Oh, up to... No, this is Fong Wu, Sunday Chop Show, if I were.
Well, Fong Wu, call Mr. Richard Diamond to the phone Chop Chop. He's got a date and she doesn't like being stood up.
Hello, Helen.
Hi. What was all that about? Did I forget you had a date with me?
Yeah, I did. And I'm sorry, baby, but right now I'm being chased like a hopped-up fox and I haven't had time to curl up and relax.
You're impossible.
I know it. Want your sorority pen back?
Well, I'll make up my mind when you get here.
I'll give you my Lone Ranger magic decoder.
You fool.
Are we still going steady?
Oh, yes. Rick, when am I going to see you?
Honey, right now I got some reading to do. Why don't you go to a movie? Little Women pass the censors. I'll be over later.
I'll probably end up marrying an usher. Don't be too late, Rick.
I won't. Besides, we get along better early in the morning.
Bye.
Bye, baby. I sat there for a minute thinking about Helen Asher and wondering why I hadn't learned how to butter my bread. She was everything a guy should want. $10 million playing multiplication in a fat trust fund. A figure that would snarl at any quiet intersection, and a mind that would give a master's degree an inferiority complex. Diamond, you fool, you. Well, Lenora Brown's little black book was a poor substitute for an evening with Helen, but three items put me in second gear. They weren't hard to find. Take out all the men's names, and there they were, three addresses. One was in the village, another in Harlem, and the last was somewhere in Chinatown. All of them were a setup for a dead man who wanted to make himself scarce. I wanted to talk with Barton before I started hunting, so I called the Wentworth.
Wentworth Hotel.
Mr. Barton, please.
Yes, sir, I'll ring him.
Hello?
Mr. Barton, this is Diamond.
Oh, yes, Diamond. Did you find out anything yet?
Not yet, but tell me, did your son tell you what his victim looked like?
Why, yes. He said he was a dark man with a scar from his nose to his chin. He said he'd never forget it.
Oh, well, thanks. Maybe I'll call you tomorrow.
I hope you clear this thing up in a hurry.
So do I. I want to get my nerves untangled. I took the easy address first, grabbed a cab, and 20 minutes later, I was walking down the steps of a little dive on the east side of Greenwich Village. It was a shabby little place, and the customers had enough long hair to give a toupee dealer the DTs. A fat waiter walked over and eyed my clean shirt. He was wearing an apron that looked like he'd made the salad on it. He was swell.
You wanted something, Mac?
Yeah, a pound of egg noodles. Just sweep them up off the floor. Do you know anyone named Lenore?
Lenore? Oh, sure, Lenore Brown. Hey, she comes in about once a week, listens to the kid at the piano. Now, why would a classy dame like that go out with him? He don't play the piano so good.
You ever see a guy with her? Dark man with a scar from his nose to his chin?
No. She always does a single.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Hey, you still want those noodles?
I walked out, got back in the cab, and marked off Greenwich Village in the little black book. The second address was on the fringe of Harlem, the Hill, they call it. The night was black and the fog had rolled in off the East River and staked out a claim all the way to Lenox Avenue. As I walked up to the old brownstone, my nerves started screaming SOS. I stopped cold and looked down at two gleaming eyes, like two pieces of polished glass shining in the glare of the dim street lamp. As I got used to the darkness, I could make him out. He was a big, white, battle-scarred bulldog, and he had some ideas of his own.
He started shuffling in slowly, jerking back his lips and showing a row of white teeth.
Hold it, Lucifer.
I hadn't heard him come out on the porch. He was a big man wearing an off-white undershirt. And from what I could see, he looked meaner than his dog. The animal stopped, but he kept facing me, showing off his toothpaste smile.
He won't hurt you, mister, unless I tell him to.
I'll think about it for a while. I'm a poor substitute for horse meat.
What do you want?
Do you know Lenore Brown?
You a cop?
Shamus.
Beat it, Lucifer.
Thanks, pal. I couldn't hold my breath much longer.
You can come up on the porch. You're looking for Lenore Brown, huh?
Yeah, know her?
I met her. My wife works for her.
Is your wife in?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah?
Come here. Some private dick wants to talk to you. She's Miss Brown's private maid.
Yeah.
Your husband tells me you work for Miss Brown.
Yeah, what's she done?
She got many friends?
Men friends.
Oh. You know a dark man with a scar?
Oh, sure, I know lots of them.
What are you talking about, woman?
Oh, I meant someone who Miss Brown knows.
What did you mean by that, mister?
Look, I really don't know anybody with a scar. Now you better beat it.
Yeah. Get moving. And I want to talk to you, woman.
Yes, honey.
I knew she was going to get bruised, but he looked rough enough to cut my windpipe, and I wanted someplace to pour my coffee down in the morning. So I got out of there fast and headed for the last address in the little black book. The place was on one of those narrow, dark streets. It was so quiet you could hear yourself change your mind. A sign above the door read Tangy, so I pushed it open and went in. If I didn't find the man with a scar here, I was out on strikes. It was a little restaurant on the bottom floor of a two-story building. A quiet waiter slipped up and showed me to a booth. He shoved the menu in my hand and disappeared before I could ask him anything. The place was empty except for an old couple sitting near the door. The waiter said something to them, and they looked quickly over at me, and then they left in a hurry. The room was completely empty now. Even the waiter had disappeared. I looked up at a flight of stairs at the far end of the room. A pair of very healthy ankles came into view, and they were holding up a pair of legs that ran my blood pressure up to 190 again. I eased my gun out and held it under the table. Lenore turned the corner and started down toward my booth like a loose snake in a rabbit pen.
Mind if I sit down?
It's your party.
Shame on you. Don't you know it's not nice to pilfer a lady's handbag? Now, Mama will have to thank.
Looks like the last address paid off.
If you're buying shrouds, it did.
Where's the guy that young Barton was supposed to have killed?
Upstairs. But he's very unsociable. Hates long conversations.
I only need a couple of lines.
He can't even do that. He likes to keep on breathing.
Old man Barton figures Alter framed his son. He's not going to let your boyfriend out of Sing Sing until he finds a man with a scar.
Think he can do better than you did?
Well, I found him.
Was it worth dying for?
I don't know. I can tell you better after I talk to him.
Mama's going to have to spank sooner than she expected. Come in, boys.
Well, look who's here. Are Mama's two big idiots out collecting blood again? Where are your buckets?
Oh, he's bitter.
Present!
You've met Chino and Ziggy before, haven't you?
Yeah, on the end of a fist.
They want to show you the town.
I know the beat.
I'll bet you've never seen it from the bottom of the East River.
No, but if you'll put on a bathing suit, I might buy the idea.
Too bad we'll never make the beach together. I'd like to show you the sights. Boys, you better help Mr. Diamond out of the booth. I think he's stuffed. You know how it is. The boys like to keep moving.
So do I. I shot once and caught Ziggy in the stomach, and I dumped the table over on Chino. He grabbed like he was going to waltz with it. I didn't even have to get up. I just shot him through the cover shot. Lenore was out of the booth fast and running for the stairs.
Look out, Tony, look out!
I caught up with her at the foot of the stairs, and as she started up, I saw him standing on the upper landing, scar and all meaning gun in his hand. He missed me, but nailed her halfway up. She spun around and fell all over me. But I point a gun pretty good from a prone position. You should have kept your nose up, mister. A bad landing washes you out. I called Lieutenant Levinson, squared myself. Then Homicide came down and cleaned things up. They were all dead, and I figured I never would reach the beach anyway. I phoned Barton, who took his son down to the morgue to look over the night's take.
Young Barton identified the man with the scars, the one he thought he'd killed. They gave me the notch, and I made another call. This time to a pair of silk pajamas with an understanding heart. It was late, but I was hungry.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Diamond. Isn't it rather late to be calling?
You know something? You're right, Francis. It's 2 a.m. Time for all good butlers to be beddy by.
Miss Helen is in the library, but I'm not sure whether she wants to see you.
Well, you just run along and get some sleep. I'll find out and let you know.
Very good, sir. Confidentially, she's a little peeved.
Look.
Chin up, Mr. Diamond.
Francis, if she gets tough with me, I'll knock her teeth out.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Francis, is that who I think it was? Oh.
Hi.
The food was cold a long time ago.
So's my date. I'm sorry, honey.
Oh, that's all right.
The fire's almost burned down.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Diamond. I've sat through 2 features of Tom and Jerry in the 4th chapter of Batman Hops a Freight.
Ah, come on, don't scold, baby.
I haven't in weeks, but I've been rehearsing this for the past 2 hours, and you're going to listen. And that's another thing. You never play when I want you to. Only when I've got you on the carpet.
That sounds like fun.
Now, stop being glib. If you think for 1 minute you can charm me and...
Out of your face with the sunshine, put on a great big smile.
Now, stop that and listen to me.
Okay, I'll shut up. Well, go on.
Oh, now you made me forget what I was going to say.
Well, if you can't remember, honey, hold a good thought.
It's a big, wide, wonderful world you live in. When you're in love, you're a master. Of all you survey, you're a gay Santa Claus.
I just remembered.
Too late now, honey. I'm rolling. There's a brand new...
We heard Richard Diamond, the Barton case. Actually, I'll amend myself. That had an original air date of the 24th of May, 24th of April, 1949. What we heard was Armed Forces Radio Service's rebroadcast recording from the 1st of May, 1949. Again, Richard Diamond was on the radio. On all three major stations, from 1949 to 1953, then went over to television, 1957 to 1960. You're hearing Peter Rigolo's theme for Richard Diamond. My name is Arthur, and this has been the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. If you're listening live, Julian's up next to Sound Slaking. Thanks for listening.
My name is Julian, and this is, it is... It's about time